Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Welcome, everybody, to our class. It is Erev Shabbos, Parshas Ki Savo. The year is 5773. We are just 2 months away from Rosh Hashanah, 5774. We have been studying this whole year on a certain theme. The theme has been a lesson or message for any Jew at any time. This has led us recently to a subtopic which we have been trying to incorporate, and that is the principles of faith, as enumerated by Maimonides and explained by our Rebbe, Rav Yaakov Weinberg, Zecher Tzadik Levracha. What I have to say today is a little bit of everything, and I pray to Hashem that I should find the right words to convey the thoughts and the feelings that lie within these words. Do you find that the most profound lessons that you learn are lessons of the heart and emotions, or lessons of the mind? Don't answer that question. Just think about it. I'd like to look at a very important issue in the Torah, and I would like to look at it from the two perspectives. One is the perspective of the heart. I would say that most people and most scholars talk about this topic. They focus on the emotional side of it. But I would also like to take a look at it from the perspective of the mind, of the intellect. The issue is hakaras hatov. The issue is gratitude. Gratitude is at the front and center, literally, at the front and at the center of our parsha. I learned this week an amazing connection that I never noticed before, and it's about the nature of simcha, the nature of joy. The first, and it relates to this topic as well, of gratitude. The parsha begins with the mitzvah of bikurim. Bikurim, first fruits. We are commanded as produce growers to take our first fruits of every type of the seven species and arrange to bring it to Jerusalem and bring it up as an offering. The Torah says that while we are there, we are commanded to rejoice, to make a celebration. I just studied in the Talmud, I think just this morning, that a bringer of Bikurim would actually deposit his fruits with the Kohen, with the priest. How could he then celebrate? He would bring offerings in addition, regular shlamim, regular peace offerings with meat, and they would make a party and sit down. And the Torah says this is part of the mitzvah. V'samachta b'chol hatov hasher nasan lecha Hashem Elokecha ulevesecha. This is the beginning of the Parsha, chapter 26, verse 11. Atov ha'levi v'hager asher b'kirvecha. You shall rejoice with all the goodness that Hashem your God has given you and your household, you and the Levite and the proselyte who is in your midst. You should invite guests that don't have a family as well to join you. It is well known and very often discussed that at the root of the mitzvah of Bikurim is hakaras hatov, gratitude. When we think about gratitude, I know, I do, we usually think of it as an emotional thing. Be thankful. Don't be an ingrate. Don't take it for granted. Be appreciative. Say thank you. Realize that it doesn't, you know, come from nowhere, that your mother slaved in the kitchen to prepare this meal, or your father worked hard to earn the money to buy your clothing. Don't think everything's coming to you. And all parents know that this is a major challenge of raising kids. And on this perspective of gratitude being an emotional thing, which Does that make sense? It's an emotional thing, you know, person, it's really the age-old emotion of, am I a giver or am I a taker? You know, do I take things for granted, or am I see myself as a grateful recipient of good, and therefore I must be gracious, and rather than being demanding or ungrateful. Human nature is not this way. Human nature is to not always be grateful. I'm not saying that there are people that don't have this quality. For many people, it comes hard, and you have to work at it. Just to share with you, just to give you some of the sources on this, my friend Alan has once again provided me with great material in our weekly sessions. And you shall rejoice with all the goodness that Hashem your God has given you and your household. This is from Torah from Your Table by the Jungreis family, which we use a lot. We may have difficulty with this passage. This commandment pertains to those who have toiled over their crops and gathered their harvest. Surely in the wake of such an accomplishment, they would not have to be told to be happy. Why do you have to tell the person who's bringing his crops to be happy? They had every reason to rejoice and be satisfied. But herein we discover the perverseness of human nature, which never allows a man to be content with what he has. Even though he succeeds, he remains restless. He desires more, and then some more again. Worse, he measures his harvest, his attainments, against those of his neighbors. And if they should have more, his jealousy consumes him, and his joy is marred. It is this jealousy that robs a person of his peace of mind, his happiness and contentment, and generates bitterness, greed, and hatred. The human heart is very volatile, and in the absence of this beautiful quality of gratitude, there could be many ugly alternatives which would rob a person of joy. And that's when the Torah says, be joyous. It's saying, no, let's acquire this good emotion. Let's acquire this good quality. And it is so essential. The connection which I never put together is what it says in the middle of the Parsha. I told you it was front and center. In the famous verses of the Tochacha, the admonition, God warning us in Kisavo what would happen to the Jewish people if we become estranged from God and we be banished from the land and we suffer all kinds of suffering which we have witnessed in the world history. There's this verse that sticks out. This is page 1080, chapter 28, verse 47. Tachas asher lo avadato es Hashem Elokecha v'simcha uvetuv levav meirov kol. In other words, the pasuk is saying, why do all these things happen? How do these terrible things, tragedies occur? And the answer is given, because you did not serve Hashem your God amid gladness and goodness of heart when everything was abundant. Remember the mitzvah of Bikurim? I commanded you, I pleaded with you, to be grateful, to rejoice with what you have. Because if you don't, it turns into exile, destruction, suffering. I never made that connection before. Mm-hmm. Bikurim and Tachas Asher Lo Avadata, because you didn't serve. You know, just as a nice psychological add-on to this emotion, again, we have this another source from Rabbi Pliskin in Growth Through Torah, a fantastic psychological observation. If you think that you will be happy only when you have more, you will never be happy. How does he predict that? When you finally get what you are hoping for, you will once again focus on getting more, and will feel unhappy until you acquire yet more. Because there's two ways to program yourself. Either happiness comes then, or happiness comes now. if you're programmed to say happiness will come then there's always going to be that anticipation for the then. So you'll never be happy. If you program yourself to say happiness comes now, then you will always be happy. Since happiness is dependent on the present state of your mind, you can only be happy if your mind is focused on appreciating what you presently have and what you are presently doing. And just having things in itself will not make you happy. We find this clearly in Pirkei Avos, that the wealthy person is only the person who experiences joy with what he has. Regardless of what you have, you are only wealthy if you have mastered the ability to appreciate what you have. This is a well-known Torah concept. Gratitude is a key to many things. But I believe that the commentaries that we've seen so far and the association we have with gratitude is that it's a matter of the heart, a matter of having the right perspective, getting it straight inside. And it's very important. This is true for Jew and non-Jew alike. Now for the second perspective. We have been venturing into fundamentals, principles of faith from Maimonides, and we have actually learned, number one, there's 13 altogether, we've learned 1 through 4. And today we are supposed to do number 5. The first 5 principles of faith all relate to man's perception of God. Starting with 6, I believe 6, 7, and 8 relates to, or maybe one more, relates to Torah. But this is the last one of man's perception of God. And we've discussed many things about the absoluteness of God, how God created the world out of nothing, thus proving that he wants the world to be here, he had a reason to create the world, he has a love for us, the world isn't just here by accident, and God, most importantly, God has not been here as long as the world has. No, God created the world. Okay, that's really what we discussed last week. What is the fifth principle? The fifth principle of faith is service of God. Maimonides number 5. Here's a quote from Maimonides. God, may he be blessed, is the only one whom it is proper to serve or worship, to praise, to make known his grandeur, and to fulfill his commandments. There should not be done to any entity that is subservient to him, be it the angels, the stars, the planets, or the elements, or their compounds. Listen carefully to Rambam. There's God, and then there are the entities that are subservient to him. Entities that God created. The angels, the stars, the planets, it all comes from God. We know that. But even after we know principle 1, 2, 3, and 4, Maimonides says, we must accept that we may not worship, praise, or do anything to those entities who are subservient to him. For their activity is programmed. They have no control and no choice but to perform his will. Thus, it is improper to serve them as intermediaries in order to come close to God. Rather, one should direct his thoughts toward the Almighty alone and abandon anything other than him. Again, a person might want to serve the intermediaries in order to come close to God. A person might do that. Not in order to find a replacement for God. Not in order to attribute source of power to anything other than God, but rather, au contraire, as a means of getting closer to God by connecting with his intermediaries. That's what this principle says. Don't do that. Abandon those intermediaries. Ignore them. Ignore the sun. Ignore the stars when you come to serve. What do you call it when somebody does serve one of the intermediaries? What do you call that?
Idolatry.
Idolatry? Oy, I thought idolatry was when you don't believe in God. When you think that the intermediary or the idol or whatever has power. Grumman says, oh, not necessarily. I mean, that's certainly idolatry, but that's not the only thing that's idolatrous. Idolatrous is relating to the intermediary instead of the source. This is the fifth principle warning us against idolatry as affirmed throughout the Torah. This means that the Torah is almost bent on driving it home to us again and again and again. Do not relate to God's intermediaries. Did you ever realize that? But that's really the essence of the Torah's exhortation against idolatry. I didn't. This is a concept which requires tremendous contemplation, thought, and also consideration of how we relate to God, and whether we relate directly to him, to the source, or whether we relate to other things. I believe that, unfortunately, I'm not being pessimistic. I think that in our time, as we've come to learn throughout history, we're even more challenged than the idolaters, because we're not even clear that where the source is, where the power comes from. Okay. Rav Weinberg has a masterful explanation of this principle. I don't have the time to go through it, but we'll just read a little bit. Idolatry generally concerns itself with the wielder of power rather than the source of power. In the eyes of idolaters, the idol was seen neither as the source of their existence nor as the source of their well-being. They understood that ultimately there was a God who was the source of their existence, but they thought that he had relegated power in much the same way as a president relegates power to the general or the officer. In this situation, man imagines a God delegating authority so that it might be able to concentrate on, so to speak, higher policies. Thus, when man creates his own image of God, he inevitably creates a God in the image of man. We think of God the way we think of the president. Lahavdil. Oy, lahavdil. He's not really involved in my personal affairs. Sure, he's the overall director, but and the source of power, but he's delegated, and I'm just going to deal with the underlings. And that's how we live our lives in the secular world. And that is the way, unfortunately, the way it spills over to our relationship with God. And principle number five says, don't fall into that trap. Don't fall into that trap. Basically, in a deeper sense, Rav Weinberg says, think of it this way. And this is there's a lot of philosophy in here. There are two kinds of creatures in the world. There are Balei Bechira, those who have free will, and those that don't. Who has free will in this world? God and man. Angels? No. The sun? The sun provides a lot of power. Does the sun have free will to provide that power? No. So you see the difference? A man who has free will is turning to an inanimate object and asking the inanimate object to give him something. He says it's better to go to the doctor and beg the doctor to treat the patient than it is to ask the son, because at least you're asking the doctor to exercise his free will. That's legitimate. Rav Weinberg says a man can even bow down to another man because he's showing respect for that person's position and that person's power of free choice. But to bow down to an intermediary of God, even though that intermediary has millions of wattage of power, there's no will there, there's no source. Okay, there's a lot in here. Please Do yourself a favor. Study Rav Weinberg's teachings. Okay, let's bring it back now to Bikurim. On a deeper level, and this may be our unique lot as bearers of the Torah, we have an additional element other than the emotions involved in the mitzvah of gratitude, in the mitzvah of Bikurim. It's not just an emotional thing. It's an ideological thing. It centers around our belief in the principles of faith, our perception of God. Where do we get our crops from? Where do we get our crops from? To overcome these negative feelings and feelings of lacking, I wish I had more. How come he has more than I have? How do we overcome these negative feelings? The Torah commands us to appreciate that whatever we have has been given to us by God. He knows what we require for our well-being. And we must condition ourselves to believe that. And to believe that if He did not give it to us, then obviously we can do without it. See, when we look at our basket and we say, what? I only have this much? You know, say, if it didn't come from God, if it came from Mother Earth, or if it came from the rainfall, or from the type of fertilizer that I used, or if it came from no source, if it was random, if it was arbitrary, then I'm going to sit there and I'm going to wallow in my resentment and in my jealousy, because to me, this was not a decision made by anyone. Why did it happen that way? I have a complaint. But if we condition ourselves to believe that God gave it to us specifically, then we should say, God, You decided that this is what I should have. I don't need more, because if I needed more, You would have given it to me. You see, the thank you is not just a matter of the emotion of not being ungrateful and grumpy and a giver rather than a taker. It is no less an acknowledgement, an affirmation of the principles of faith of what is the source of our blessing. Just like what is the source of our power, what is the source of our blessing. If we absorb this basic principle, if we bear in mind that it is God who is in charge, that it is He who provides us with all our needs, then we will be blessed, not with produce, better. We will be blessed with simchas hachayim, joy of life. We will find fulfillment in our own lot, for we will realize that we do not need more. This spirit of simchas hachayim is the ticket to peace of mind. If we lose sight of it, we underwrite our own doing. This concept of Simchas HaChayim is at the root of Hakaras HaTov, the gratitude that is one of the basic pillars of the principles of our faith. Feelings of Hakaras HaTov are so crucial to the proper service of God that toward the end of the Parsha, this is where I learned the connection, we are told that our exile would come about because we did not serve God with joy and goodness of heart. Of course, we lost our faith in God. And if we lost our faith in God, we probably stopped serving Him with great enthusiasm, and eventually we probably stopped serving Him altogether. Hakaras HaTov is not just a nice quality of character that you want your children to have, because it's so pleasant and so unpleasant when they're ungrateful. Hakaras HaTov is the practical application of faith in God, of the principles of faith. This is so important. So look what Hakaras HaTov does for us. A, it gives us personal peace of mind. B, it establishes a connection with God. Of course, we will serve him if we realize that everything we have, including our own lives and our well-being, is a gift from him. It will prompt us to want to serve him and to fulfill his commandments. And C, it will also solve that other nagging area of life, which is for which we are told that our second temple was destroyed. Right? What's that? Sinas chinam, baseless hatred, of which Lashon Hara is a part. Baseless hatred between people. One might protest, as does not conflict with the dictum that our temple was destroyed because of baseless hatred between Jew and Jew. In other words, the Torah is saying we will go into exile because we didn't serve God with joy. The Talmud teaches us that we go into exile because we had baseless hatred from Jew to Jew. Isn't that a contradiction? Which one is it? Upon closer scrutiny, we will realize that there's no dichotomy between these two teachings. For as was explained, when one is not happy, when one is not content, at the root of his feelings is, I need more, and those feelings lead to resentment and jealousy, culminating in hatred. So this Hakaras HaTov, which is really belief in all the principles of faith, is the key to self-peace, relationship with God, and acceptance of whatever happens, and thus it clears the way and frees us from any hatred from one to another. How powerful can that be? In conclusion, this is what Rosh Hashanah is all about. What is Rosh Hashanah all about? Being Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, declaring Hashem is the king. What do you mean the king? I know he's the king. Of course, he created the whole world. He is the only king. That means a reaffirmation of this principle. There's no one else to turn to. There's no one else that has power. There's no one else that is in charge of what I have and what he has and what she has other than him. That is worthy of a holiday. That's the beginning of everything. That's the beginning of the whole cycle of the year. It all starts with this principle of recognizing what is our source. What is our source of power? What is our source of blessing? If we are Mamlech HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if we make him the king, in all the senses of these principles of faith, we accept his Torah as the absolute truth. We accept his everlasting existence. We accept his plan. We accept his knowledge of everything that happens, his knowledge of me, and we accept him as being the source of our power. That is the ultimate recharging of the batteries. It affects our intellectual awareness, and it spills over into all of our emotions, and it covers all areas of being, our personal being, our relationship with him, and our relationship with others. It's not easy, what I'm saying. What I'm talking about may sound nice, but we struggle with this. If they struggled with it back then, when they knew that God was the source of the power, and they were making, so to speak, an honest mistake, maybe a misjudged calculation. I want to connect with God. I want to relate to his intermediaries. And if that was enough to get them off track, how much more do we have to search and find, you know, because we live in a world that doesn't even accept the basic principles. If we say in God we trust, it's just lip service. Do we understand what that really means? Do we understand the concept of absoluteness? Do we understand the concept of creating something out of nothing? And all the 13 principles? No. That is not our lexicon in the world we live in. So this is not easy. This requires tremendous work and study and internalizing the messages. But at least I think we have some opening to understand what the task is and why it's so important and how powerful it can be. Thank you for listening, and please
yes, you're
please
incredible.
Come
That's
through
incredible.
With your wonderful comments.
That's incredible. You should come.
Oh, wow.
You said something about how cars are called Is the Active something, and I wasn't writing to get it.
It's the how-to of faith. It's the practical application of faith. If we are able to recognize where our blessings come from in our personal lives and have that affect our inner peace, our relationship with Hashem and with others, that is the practical, you know, the how-to of our faith. Yeah.
One thing you seem to skirt me and never really address is that the ultimate test for Hakor Hatov is to believe that when things aren't going so well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may be one of the reasons that we're having such difficulty in this time, because many of us are suffering financially, health-wise, whatever. And to think that Hashem wants that of us, wants to do that to us, how can we thank Him for that? But everything that happens, good and bad, requires a course of toe. And when things are going good, you get the parking space when you want it and so forth. You don't look up and say, thanks, Hashem, I really appreciate it. Or you get through the red light, you know, or you just missed an accident, you know, thank God for that. You might, but when you're being ultimately tested, and God forbid we have to deal with that, that, I think, really attests to maybe a different level that we're having to work through.
It's a great question. Thank you. I thought about something this week also. There's a whole part of my week that I didn't share with you at all, and I'm not going to now. I have discovered that if you really want to prepare for Rosh Hashanah, study Shemos chapter 34. Study the dialogue between Moshe and Hashem after the Chet HaEgel, after the golden calf. Golden calf was exactly this, Avodah Zarah, trying to create an intermediary. Hashem's conversation with Moshe was of how to rid ourselves of that and how to go back to dealing directly with Hashem. There was something in there, a little commentary by the Sepharno. Sepharno said that what people used to do in ancient times is they would serve idols, not necessarily, as Rabbi Weinberg said, not necessarily to attribute the ultimate power from Hashem, but they thought that if you serve the idol, that's who you have to talk to if you want to get something immediate. You know, it's kind of like the guy who goes and prays to Hashem, and then he says, well, I'm just going to go buy the raffle ticket just in case. That kind of thing. And there's a difference between hishtadlus, you know, which is endeavor, and the idea of, well, let me hedge my best, and let me just do that just in case. There's a big difference. But after this, and he says, come to me, don't go to idols. Then there is a Sepharno, and the Sepharno says that the following verses after that says, and celebrate the holidays. Celebrate Pesach, celebrate Shavuos, celebrate Sukkot. And why those all of a sudden? What's that got to do with idolatry? The Sepharno says that we have holidays around those times when we are most needing of our parnasa, of material success. And Hashem says, instead of serving idols, come to observe the holidays and come to me for your hopes for success. And the Sepharno uses the word hatzlachos hamedumos, those imaginary successes. Come to God for those imaginary successes. And I was bothered, why did he say imaginary successes? They're the real successes. It's just that we should go to God instead of going to the idol. Why does he call them imaginary successes? It was nagging at me. And I think this morning I came with an approach. The person who's going, turning to God every day and asking Him for that success, that windfall or that new job or whatever, right, is a whole lot better than the person who's going to the idol, right? But it's not the highest level. It's a great level, but it's not the highest level. Why not?
Should you just be trusting that you've got everything that you need?
Okay. Okay, that's one point. That's one point. How do you know you need that? How do you know you need that thing? If you think you need it, I'm glad you're turning to God and not an idol. Okay, but how do you know you need that? That's one thing. There's even a higher level. Why did God put us here in the first place? Why did God give us needs? Why did God satisfy our needs? Why did God sometimes not satisfy our needs? In order for us to discover Him.
To grow.
In order for us to learn these principles.
Then says that God opens His hand and satisfies the needs of all people.
Correct. But am I serving God so that I can get what I think I need? Or am I dealing with my needs so that I can come to discover God? If we look at it that way, then either way, we've won. Either way, we've succeeded. Either way, we've hit the goal. Because if the goal is to pray to God, if the goal is to learn where to come to for our source, besides the fact that I don't need more, that was the reason, that was the purpose, that was the goal. It's a very high level. We are humans, and we have needs, and we want them to be fulfilled, and we hope that God will grant us our blessings. But realize that the ultimate goal of all of that is to discover Him. That's the goal. So that can happen maybe even better sometimes when we're lacking.
So if I'm satisfied with what I have, I may not need to pray God. So I should understand that I should use my needs not for the purpose, for the sake of my needs, but as a tool to discover Hashem.
Right. And if you have all your needs, you can still turn to Hashem and say thank you. Because that's just as good a prayer as I need. And it's a better prayer because it shows that you recognize where your blessings come from too. So either way, whether we're turning to Hashem to say, please help me, or we're turning to Hashem to say, thank you for giving me what I need, the goal is turning to Hashem and discovering that and strengthening that and deepening our faith and deepening our awareness of the reality.
Mm-hmm. On that line, there's two kinds of brachas, a todah,
Thank
you, and a petition.
Yeah.
And a request.
Yeah.
Those are the two types.
Yeah.
I thought that Hakaras Hatov is recognizing the good, which is not quite the same as acknowledging the good or grace.
Or
graciousness.
I've also thought about it. Hakara means recognizing, but it's really a two-step process. It's the Hakara inside. I have it. Where did I get it? I need to respond. And then responding. It's the communication, but it requires first the hakara, first the recognition. Yeah.
Did you use the expression imaginary hatzlacha?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you said that, what came to my mind was the term dream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We live in a dream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we live in our ancestors' dream.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And our successors will live in our dreams and what we have put into place.
Mm-hmm.
So when we ask Him, it's for us to dream appropriately, I feel, so that we are here really with constant awareness that nothing exists without Him and that, well, I came from Him. I'm constantly aware when... You know, we just get in daily conversations with each other and all these everyday mundane.
Right.
It's a sensation, the eyeball.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and so much of these things that we really don't stop to think about. Thank you.
And by the way, that's one of the that's one of the advantages of shall we say senior living. You know, I think that this only grows. Of course, if we don't develop habits, we may not. But it's something as we ripen and mature. Yes.
we can come to see this more and more. I remember Rav Aaron Feldman, Shlita from Baltimore now, came to speak at Rav Emanuel's, his older brother, Rav's 80th birthday. And he commented on the age of Gevuros in the Pirkei Avos. It has the different decades and what each decade is for. And 80 was for Gevuros, for strength. And you know, the average octogenarian is not in the peak of his strength. He's not running marathons. So what does it mean, strength? Okay, spiritual strength. Rav Aaron says it's the age at which you can begin to fathom the strength of God, the Gevuros Hashem. Bettina, she had her hand up before.
I don't even remember at which point when you were talking if this occurred to me, but it's good to always think when something negative occurs, think of past events and how they eventually led to something positive. Just this week, I heard of someone in the community, it was their son, a man, who was bitten by a bat. And they didn't know if the bat was rabid or not because the bat wasn't there, and he had to be tested, and they discovered he needed a heart valve replacement. And he had a heart valve replacement. But it was only discovered because he was bitten by a bat. So one has to keep noticing things like that throughout the life.
Mine was much less consequential, but I lost my phone this week, and I thought I had been outside in the yard playing catch with my son, and I thought I may have let it there. I may have left it there. It dropped my pocket. So I was out there searching, and I found that my credit card, unbeknownst to me, totally different, had fallen, and I found my credit card there. And then I found my phone in the house. But had I not been searching for my phone in the yard, I wouldn't have found my credit card. Okay, yes, Dr. Bronstein.
Let me just respond right here. On my way here, the music was on, and I was listening to, Life is a Dream.
Ah.
The theme was, wake me up when it's all over. Wake me up when it's all over, this dream is over, when I'm older and wiser.
The whole Birkas Kohanim, though, has many, many, many dream-like aspects.
Yeah. So you're saying that we're like asking for the best of everything, right?
We're asking to be in the dream, not just the reality of Judaism, but the dream of Judaism with Beis HaMikdash, with the Avos there, the merits of the Avos.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Hashem has much more to reveal to us of his presence. We're living in the shadow of those days of revelation. You know, the Beis HaMikdash with King David and King Solomon, just dream about it. Conjure up an image when all Jews lived in Eretz Yisrael, when nations recognized their specialness and came to, we had that dream-like existence only for a short period of time, really during David HaMelech and Shlomo HaMelech. And since then, we're just trying to get back to that. So we have to dream. The dream is the ultimate dream of Yom Ahu, Yehi Hashem Echad Ushmal Echad. On that day, Hashem's name will be one. Hashem will be one, and His name will be one, and we won't have to guess, and we won't have to search. It will be there for us to enjoy. In the meantime, Hashem has empowered us to be those Baalei Bechira, those who have tremendous power of choices to find Him and to raise mankind and to bring about this revelation with our initiative, because that is the greatest joy that can be when man comes to discover God. Yeshua Koa.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.